Ramsey TV.
Hey man, it's the Florida guy. People sometimes ask me, Martin, how can you stand to live in Florida in the summer? Because as I speak to you, it's the middle of July. I'm here in South Florida, not just any Florida, but South Florida. And the truth is that summer is my favorite time of year. Yeah, because I love the heat and it's guaranteed to be hot. Sometimes get this in the winter, it'll go down to 60 degrees. It's like, come on. No, that's not true. Sometimes it dips into the 40s. Yeah, it's not good. Not good for me. I did that. Been there, done that. So I am warm and toasty and happy here in South Florida, sweating, just fantastic. That's why they invented air conditioning. Now, I thought last week was a fabulous week here on MZTV because I'm dissecting Romans chapter 6. And Romans chapter 6 is the opposite of what most expositors, what most Christians think it is. They think that this is the Apostle Paul trying to tell people how not to sin, trying to warn them, do not do bad things, or you might be in big trouble. But it's not that at all. It's what to do with sin after it's manifest, after it has occurred. That's a nice way to put it, after sin has occurred. What happened to you today? Well, sin occurred, and what do you want me to do? I love how A. Enoch, who translated the Concordant Literal New Testament, he personifies sin here, because sin is personified. It's a figure of speech. Sin dwells in you. That's a figure of speech. This thing called sin doesn't really dwell in you, but because of mortality coursing through your veins, you will fail. And that's sin, missed the mark. But sin is spoken of as a power. And I like this because you realize that if you personify sin, you realize that it is the enemy. The thing that lives in you is the enemy. It produces the misses, the bad things you do in your life. Yes, it produces it, but it's its own source. I mean, it is a power. But this is what Paul's dealing with here. The irony is, the paradox is, the best way to fight sin is to ignore it, because then it shrinks. Remember that hymn? I've mentioned it to you before. I've never sang it because I'm not a hymn singing guy, but it's something like, put your eyes on his beautiful face and the things of the world will go strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. It's that thing of when you contemplate Christ, then the world grows dim. I just told somebody the other day, I've been talking about these things for a long time. And these things are not theoretical to me. They're real. When I did the mini-series within the Revelation series called The Final Years of Millennium 6, speaking of the timing of the coming of Christ, I'm there. I mean, it's not just theory to me. It's not just verses. It's not just numbers. This stuff's real, and the things of the world have been and are growing dim in light of God's glory and grace. So it's true that whatever you contemplate something good. Paul says, whatever things are lovely, lovely. Yeah, I put another syllable in there, lovely. Whatever things are payoa, whatever things are of good report. See, I'm adding syllables there because it's such a glorious passage. Paul says, think on these things. And then by doing that, the things of the world grow dim. But if you concentrate on trying to make the things of the world go dim, if you concentrate on that, you try to micromanage your life, it doesn't work. It never works. It may work for 45 minutes, may work for 45 days, but it's a Hollywood village you've created, supported by 2x4s. That is, by your willpower, by your resolve to accomplish great feats of asceticism and self-discipline. Now, self-discipline is good. I'm not saying it's not, but it's a fruit of the Spirit. You don't get it by deciding to self-discipline. Again, it's a paradox, but by trying to directly manage it, it's a trap. Paul lays this out in Romans chapter 7. I had not been aware of coveting until the law said, thou shalt not covet. then the sin getting an incentive through the precept. There's the psychology that God built into us. Sin, that thing personified lying within us, gets an incentive through the precept. Sin is hibernating. Sin is just, you know, just settled in for the night. And then suddenly sin hears that there's a commandment. What? What's this? Yeah, thou shalt not covet. Oh, thou shalt not covet. Sin gets an incentive. I'm quoting Romans chapter 7. I should do Romans chapter 7 after chapter 6. It only follows. But I'm on a diversion now from Romans chapter 10. So if you remember that, it's been a couple, 3 weeks. I got into free will. Now I got into Romans chapter 6, but I'm still on in my mind Romans chapter 10. Don't worry. I'm going to tie it all together for you. But you ignore it. It seems like the most unscriptural advice you could ever give anybody. Ignore your flesh. What church ever tells you to ignore your flesh? And yet that is exactly what Paul is telling us in Romans chapter 6. Ignore your flesh. Because any attempt to directly control it will end in failure. Not at first. It might look good for a while, but you'll crack eventually because you're not depending on the Spirit. You're not depending on setting your affections on things above. You're depending on your willpower. Again, your asceticism, your willpower. Willpower lasts only so long. The Spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. The flesh is weak. When you just acknowledge that the flesh is weak, turn away from it, then it will grow strangely dim. And the voices of sin that were vexing you will get dimmer and dimmer and dimmer. They'll go away. And they'll be quite upset that you're concentrating on something else. Sin will not like it when you quit thinking about it. Sin will not like it. Oh no, it will call you back. Come back. Come back to me. It'll put on a sexy little voice. Hey baby, don't you remember all those good things we did when we fought our flesh? Oh yeah, those things that ended in failure. Don't think about that part, my lover. My former lover, not into you anymore, sin, not into you. And there's no religious person on this planet that's going to draw me back into a life and death struggle with my flesh. Nope, not going to happen. This takes boldness to believe what Paul is saying in Romans chapter 6. So let's continue. In Romans chapter 6. This stuff is life-changing when you realize what it says. Paul says, thus you also, I'm just, you know, starting where we left off, kind of. Maybe I'm going a couple verses ahead to get the flow back. Romans 11. Thus you also be reckoning yourselves to be dead indeed to sin. Dead to it. Not dead in it, dead to it. Reckoning your, and if you have to, this proves, if you have to reckon it, I said this before, I'll say it again, I'm going to go into new material here, but if you have to reckon it, then you have to think it this way, a certain way. Again, if you were sinless, this exhortation would not be needed. It would be superfluous. And it would be stupid too. Reckon yourselves to be dead to sin. Paul's not going to say this to you when you've been made sinless. This exhortation only exists if there is sin in your life. That's why I say this chapter 6, it'll change everything when you realize that Paul is telling you not how to stop sinning, not how to control your flesh, not telling you that at all. He's not telling you that. He's telling you what to do with this thing that has been a burden your entire life, all your failures, all your habits that you still do, your bad habits, they vex you. Paul's saying, don't let them vex you anymore. You're not living to righteousness. You're still living in sin. You're still letting sin lord it over you. You have a new master now. We're going to get into that. This is so good. We're going to get into it today, right now. You have a new master. And the master is righteousness. Now submit yourself to righteousness. It's nothing to do with what you're doing. I mean, your micro acts. It has to do with your entire disposition, the entire way you're thinking. You present your members as slaves of righteousness. That is, God declaring you righteous. It's not like Paul's not saying you set your members, you determine to make your members do righteousness, do righteous things. He's not saying that. He says, offer yourselves as slaves of righteousness. That is, you're owned by this truth that you are now justified and that God looks at you as perfect. Tie yourself to that truth and the result will be, well, Paul said, it says in the Old Testament somewhere, read the whole Old Testament, you'll find it. I think it's in either Proverbs or Ecclesiastes. As a man thinks, so is he. Yes, as you think, so are you. And to whom you offer yourselves as slaves, the acts that follow will be either righteous acts or sinful acts. But the offering of yourself as a slave to either righteousness or sin has nothing to do with your individual acts. It has to do with your general disposition. Going to get to that here. This is glorious. It's life-changing. Literally life-changing. Literally life-changing. Because the only way you can control, hope to control, the only way you can hope to control your flesh and to live a life worthy of Christ and to not give the message a bad name because you're out there doing crazy stuff. The only way that has a chance of happening is by ignoring that whole world and concentrating on Christ. I'm not saying you ignore your flesh and don't do anything. You have to now that you're no longer engaged with the self-help programs of the flesh. Yeah, isn't that ironic? An act of the flesh is trying to control the flesh. Trying to control the flesh is an act of the flesh. That's the other message of Romans 6. I'm trying to control my flesh. Oh, I'm sorry you're so involved in a giant act of the flesh. What? Yeah, it's an act of the flesh to be a slave of the flesh and try to micromanage it instead of presenting yourself, instead of turning away from the darkness, turn away from the darkness. Let me ask you this. Paul says, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are pure, whatever things are of good report, think on these things. Is sin lovely? Is the idea of trying to lead a sinless life, is that of a good report? Is that lovely? Is that pure? No, it's a life of bondage. What is lovely and pure and of good report? Thinking about Jesus. I'm not kidding here. Thinking about Jesus, thinking about Christ, being thankful. Being thankful that you're declared righteous, concentrating on that, no longer thinking of yourself as a miserable sinner. You may have remnants of being a miserable sinner. Of course, at times you will be a miserable sinner, but you're no longer thinking of yourself that way. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, we no longer consider anyone according to flesh. And that would include ourselves, I would think, right? Anyone? Don't, right? Paul says we're not even supposed to think of Christ according to flesh. We're not supposed to think of Christ as the ex-carpenter from Nazareth. No. We're supposed to think of the glorified Christ. And we're supposed to see ourselves now as glorified people. Now we're getting to verse 13, my favorite verse of this whole thing. It's a big acting job. You fake it till you make it. Where do you hear this? Okay, verse 11. Thus be reckoning yourselves to be dead indeed to sin, yet living to God, toward God, through Christ Jesus our Lord. Let not sin then be reigning in your mortal body. And again, people think if sin's reigning in your body, then you're doing sins. No, nothing to do with it. Nope, nothing to do with you doing sins. Sin reigning in your mortal body is sin telling you what to do. And sin wants to always tell you to control it. That's sin's strategy, because sin knows the psychological disposition of the human, because God made it that way. That is that sin, getting an incentive through the precept, produces in me all manner of righteousness, Paul says. He's talking about the law of Moses in that case, but I say to you that it is any precept. The New Year's resolution, how long do those last? Maybe a couple days, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a couple months, but I pretty much guarantee you by the next New Year's, it's all over, and you're probably resolving the same thing again. But But if you don't give this stuff power, it will go away. It won't go away on your timetable. That's the thing. It'll go away on God's timetable. God's timetable is not your timetable. So you might not look good at first, honestly. If you start doing this, and this is something you do with your mind. This is something you can actually do. When you start this, it might be that sin might take advantage of it. I don't know what's going to happen. It doesn't matter. Because you don't need to look behind you. Jesus said in concerning the circumcision gospel, whoever takes the hand to the plow to do the work of the kingdom. In that context, if they look back, they're not worthy. If they look back, they're not worthy. Now apply that to this. It's like Lot's wife looking back at Sodom and Gomorrah. Your flesh is Sodom and Gomorrah. And God's in the process of helping it, doing things for it, but only as you look ahead. You look back at Sodom and Gomorrah, you're going to turn into a pillar of salt. And then the only way you'll find a lover is to find a pillar of pepper somewhere. It's the only way you're going to have a relationship once you turn into a pillar of salt. I don't wish this for you or for anyone. Don't look back. Don't look back. It'll be so tempting. And sin won't believe what you're doing. Sin, capital S, the personified thing, won't believe what you're doing. Like, how dare you not concentrate on me anymore? That's not very holy. That's not very spiritual. You're supposed to be over here. But you give it the finger. You give it the finger. You say, screw you, sin. I'm going to concentrate on something else. I'm going to consider myself righteous. I'm going to consider myself what God calls me. How do you like that? Oh, ho, ho. Sin will not like it. Sin will not like it. And if you start doing this and you tell your friends about it, they will try to draw you back in. This is the voice of Satan. You need to tell those friends, get behind me, Satan. They'll say to you, what do you mean you're not worried about your sin anymore? What do you mean you're not going to let this project that we have encouraged you to set forth upon your own sanctification? What do you mean you're going to give that up? And you say, well, I mean, I'm not going to give it up and go into a void. I'm going to give it up and I'm going to focus. I'm going to tell myself every day as I look in the mirror, God has declared you righteous. At which time they will say, well, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, God has declared you righteous, but there's always the but that comes in there. There's always the but. The only way you can see the but is if you look behind you. Then you see all the buts back there. But, yes, of course God's declared you righteous, but you still have to work on your flesh. Romans 6 says you don't. Same argument of the law guys, the circumcisionists in Galatians. Of course you're saved by Christ. Of course you're justified. Great grace. Yeah, Paul's right. It's great stuff. But, always the but. Well, you still, you know, you got to help it along with law. So nobody can believe it. Nobody will like it. Nobody will encourage you to, like, totally abandon this war. And that's what you've been in. You've been in a war with your flesh. I got to keep going to Romans here. I'm looking at my time. Let not sin then be reigning in your mortal body. That's what that means. For you to be obeying its lusts. I talked about this on Friday. I got to emphasize it again in case somebody missed it, because I gave you a lot of information. Obeying its lusts. This right here is life-changing. Not your lusts. Christianity wants to talk about your lusts. Now we're talking about something much more powerful, much more insidious, much more dangerous. And that is sin's lusts. The lust of sin, that thing operating in you and that will continue to operate in you until you are made immortal at the snatching away of the body of Christ. This thing isn't going away because we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And so you have to deal with it. That's what this whole chapter is about. How you deal with it and what are its lusts to be obeying. And again, to obey means to under hear, H-E-A-R. Those are the two English elements of the Greek word. And the definition is to heed and to hear and to heed. To hear and to heed. Sin's lust, it lusts for attention. And this is the thing itself. We're not talking about individual acts. Again, I keep emphasizing that. But something I say today is going to be different than something I said Friday, and this is going to sink home to you. Obeying its lusts, sin itself, the thing that is stronger than you, more powerful than you. You're going to fight this thing? Are you kidding me? You, a weak human being, a mortal human being, you're going to fight sin. Is that what you're really going to do? Well, that doesn't make much sense. And I might even call it stupid, because the only person that was strong enough to fight sin was Jesus Christ on the cross. And for 6 hours, he suffered in all the preliminary humiliations, and he took on sin there. That was life. That was a life and death struggle with sin. Why in the hell are you in a life and death struggle with sin now? Why are you in a life and death struggle? He was in the life and death struggle, and he succeeded against it. In Romans 6:6, the old humanity was crucified with Christ. Oh, that's good news. That means that he conquered it. Now you're still trying to conquer it? What is your problem? What is your quest? Does it make you feel good? Does it make you feel powerful? Does it make you feel like you're cooperating with Jesus Christ? Oh, are you like co-crucified with Christ? Were you one of the thieves next to him? Or you were like, what kind of participation did you have in the life and death battle that Jesus Christ conducted against sin on the cross? Now you're going to battle it? Oh, you got to be kidding me. You're going to lose? It's an unnecessary battle because it's already been fought and won. So sin's lust is to build itself as this giant thing that you need to engage in fighting. You need to engage it. That's what sin's lust is. Sin lusts for your attention. The thing. It wants you to pay attention to it. It wants you to fight it. It wants you to be worried about it, to be concerned about it. Don't you like it when your significant other is worried about you and concerned about you? Everybody lusts for that. Everybody lusts to be worried about, to be concerned about. Sin, it's the same. I mean, sin is the same thing. I'm not saying that's wrong, but sin has evil lusts, evil desires. So don't hear its lusts. Nothing to do with yours in this context. Nor yet be presenting your members as implements of injustice to sin. Again, sin will create the injustices. And if you sell your soul to the sin thing, and again, people who are fighting sin have sold their soul to sin. That's the thing nobody understands about Romans chapter 6. People who are fighting sin have sold their soul to sin, and it will produce more injustice. Nor yet be presenting your members as implements, that is, tools to be used by capital S sin. But present yourselves to God as if alive from among the dead, and your members as implements of righteousness to God. For sin shall not be lording it over you. Itself, its lust, lording it, its condemnation, its guilt. It shall not be lording it over you, for you are not under law, but under grace. There it is. You're not under law. Any law, your own invented law, the Mosaic law, any law, screw it. And screw your inability to do it. Of course you can't do it. That was already proven with Israel. The only way they're going to do it in the future is when God puts a law in their hearts. The only way it's going to happen. But you're not even under it. So what are you doing? Present yourselves to God as if alive from among the dead. As I told you, this is a big act. This is an act. Present yourself as if alive from among the dead. Yes, Paul is telling you in Romans 6, the Bible is telling you to pretend you're alive from among the dead. Pretend. Let's play a little pretend game, okay? Let's pretend that you're actually alive from among the dead. Let's pretend that you're already snatched away. Let's pretend that you've already been constituted just. Let's play a little pretend game. That's exactly what this is. present yourselves to God as if alive from among the dead. You're not alive from among the dead, otherwise we wouldn't need to tell you to present yourselves to God as if you were alive from among the dead. Fake it until you make it.